once again, the Success Is My Religion podcast is partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement. We are interviewing the co-authors of the North Carolina A&T State University's third edition book that is coming out soon. I hope you enjoyed these episodes. I just figured out that I don't have this brother's bio. Attorney Lynch is phenomenal. He is doing great things in the community. Listen to this episode. Let us know what you think. I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, hello.
Hey, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Man, I'm good. I'm glad to be on with you.
I'm glad we can make it happen. My name is Michael. This is the Success Is My Religion podcast, and we study success from the perspective of Americans and people of color. You already know why we're here. You're the co-author of another North Carolina A&T University, our state university, Aggies, third edition from the HBCU Experience Movement.
Yes, sir.
I am really glad you're here. So welcome to the podcast. I appreciate it.
It's my honor. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be with you, Michael.
So we'll just get into it. And I know time is of the essence, but tell us what you do and how did going to North Carolina A&T State help you in your quest for success?
All right. Well, I'm Chance Lynch.
I'm
from Halifax County. I'm a native of Halifax, and I graduated North Carolina A&T State University in 2006. I left A&T and went to another HBCU, North Carolina Central University School of Law, where I earned my Juris Doctor, and I returned home to practice there. I started out as a prosecutor in Halifax County, and then I went into private practice and to criminal defense. And over the last 12 years, my practice has shifted from not just criminal defense, but I do family law. And as of this year, my practice has transitioned more where I'm now on a national platform as a national civil rights attorney representing the family of Andrew Brown, the black man that was killed in Elizabeth City by Pasquotank sheriff deputies, and several other high profile cases all over the country. So I'm grateful for North Carolina A&T because it gave me an awareness, man. It really allowed me to not just understand the struggle of African Americans and blacks, but to really find my voice in ameliorating all of our neighborhoods and our communities and giving voice to the indigent. You know, it just gave me an awareness that I was able to relate to. You know, it met me where I was. Mm-hmm. When I went to A&T, Michael, listen, man, when I left Halifax County, went A&T, we still had people using outhouses.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, in 2002, people still using outhouses. And so I went to North Carolina A&T not knowing just how impactful it would be, not just in my career, but as an individual in cultivating me to have this awareness about, you know, my brothers and sisters and the plight that we have, regardless of the education levels that we are able to attain and reach, the plight is still there. And so it gave me an awareness to be able to see it and to be able to give voice to those who needed the help to be able to stand up against it.
That's a good word to, or good phrase, I guess, the plight is
right.
Talk about that and how that you got it brung out of you from your HBCU experience.
You know, so the plight for black folk, man, it is never ending. It's a sad reality. And sometimes, sadly, we like to think that if you reach a certain educational level or socioeconomic level or salary or tax bracket that it goes away, but it's not so. I think one of the worst things that we can do is to think that when we reach a level of quote unquote success that this plight leaves us, and it doesn't. Our skin, our background, we are the summation of our experiences. All of that is a reminder to not just us, but to those around us who don't look like us. That this plight, the racial segregation, even though we may not have, you know, we may not have Jim Crow as it was years ago, but we still have sophisticated prejudice and racism. I mean, Voting Rights Act, for example, just the Voting Rights Act, where it's being blocked on Capitol Hill just as of last week. Just this, the plight continues, man. And so being a product of North Carolina A&T and HBCU, it gives me the fuel that I need every day in my career, in my personal walk, in my marriage as a father, as a father married to a Black woman that's also an Aggie, and two Black daughters who I'm going to tell that they've got three schools they can go to. They can go to A&T, North Carolina A&T, North Carolina A&T State University, whichever one of those schools they choose to pick. But those future Aggies, man, that just because you attain success, it doesn't mean that you don't have an inherited responsibility to stand up for those who are still fighting for it.
Right. So I want to kind of hone in on the level of like our success. Like, it don't stop there, because it really, success is a constant growth throughout life.
Absolutely.
And it, I work in the inner city community, and I mean our community, but I'm looking at the students and I'm seeing where they come from, and I'm like, you got to make a lot of right decisions, and you have to be forward thinking to get from your situation to even you know, just to on a even playing field just for you. Because I've seen that in my own life. I'm like, man, put in all of this work, I made all the, like, I would have to be 100% perfect in the decisions that I made to really be all the way at this point of time, you know. And I'm like, it's still going on, and we still have kind of like that subconscious, well, it ain't subconscious, it's all around us, that plight that kind of holds us back from reaching our fullest potential. And I think just seeing other people that are successful, Black people, and successful in all aspects of life, because you mentioned your family and how you raising them and how they're coming up and stuff, like, that is so important to me. Is to, like, we need those all around reminders, not just you're good in business or you're good in your specific field, but when you go home or on the weekends, you looking like you looking crazy. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, man, look, to that end, I think that when we really step back, man, and just look at the plight of our communities, because every community with people of color, they have their own plights. No matter what the size of the house or what side of the railroad track you're on, the plight still exists. But when I talk to kids, man, I think the hardest part to be able to get them to see, for them to participate in this pursuit is two things, Michael. I think the first one is the probability, and the second is the possibility. And I think that some kids need to see that it's actually possible. Yeah. That you can get out of this, that is okay. I mean, that is actually possible, that there are other things that exist. You can't go after what you don't even know is there for you to pursue. If your small town or your city is the only thing that you've ever known, at a certain age, you want to explore. And then when you get a little bit more mature, you even become complacent, or you disrupt this mentality that you have. And so you go from that, yeah, it's actually possible, but then you got to look at the probability You know what I mean? What resources you have. Listen, I came from Halifax County, the poorest county in North Carolina. Would you believe, man, the first time that I saw a Burnson burner was when I went to North Carolina A&T.
Oh, really?
I read about it. I seen pictures. But we had textbooks that had been passed down for years. And so when I went to school, a lot of what my colleagues that were from bigger metropolitan cities that they had experienced, I mean, it was just nothing to them. I mean, my eyes were wide open. And so I had to understand the probability of me being able to get out of that type of environment. Not that I'm better than that, but just that I have this responsibility to return to it, to help the people who did not quite grab a hold of that possibility. And that's what HBCUs, they do that. They teach us that, hey, you can make it, you can be successful, but don't forget, you've got this inherited responsibility to go back to those places, those desolate places, and give them something to pursue and to go after just like you. And that's why I'm grateful for A&T.
Man. So I wrestle with this, like, at some point in time, you got to leave and then come back. How long is that leave and then come back? Because, like, you gotta go and venture out on your own. And I truly believe that you have to be 100%, like, not 100%, but, like, you 90 to 100% successful in your own life to pull somebody up. And I know we can help people along the way. I'm not saying that doesn't happen,
right?
But for it to really impact, let's pull somebody up and let's all the way be successful ourselves. Because, you know, if we trying to help each other out, I mean, we can help each other out at the same level, but we not getting to another level because we can't. There's no differential in where we're at. So what was that comeback like for you? And have you, like, stepped into that role yet? Because I think that's another aspect of success that needs to be explored.
Well, you know, I don't know if it is the length of time. I think that one of the things that we have to do before we can pick other people up, we've got to make sure that we're strong enough ourselves.
Right. That's the point, yeah, I was trying to get.
You know, and I think that sometimes we can do that prematurely. If you do it prematurely and you go back, then it's likely that you can get sucked in or held down by that system. And you can succumb to what the ideology is in that area. You know, some people are going to say, oh, they think that they're better. Oh, that they think that they have arrived. And what I've learned in success, Michael, is that sometimes, you know, people say, oh, you changed, but it really wasn't you that changed. It was them. That sometimes your level of success can be intimidating for others who have yet to reach what they're after. So I'm not sure. I think that all of that is very, very, very subjective. On how much time you need. But here's the thing. I think that whether the focus is on the time, I think that it's also the tugging of who you have to lift and who doesn't want to be lifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the greatest disappointment is when you go back and you try to pick people up and try to get them to see something and you see more in them than they see in themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think the hardest part is learning that letting go and letting people just stay where they are sometimes, because that's just what they want anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes that's the hardest thing, when you know what's available to them, but they just don't want it.
Yeah.
You've got to learn to say, you know what? I'm going to expose you to it, but it's you to pursue it. It's up to you to pursue that. And it's for you to go after. And so I think that whatever career it is, giving yourself enough foundation that you don't get just enough to go back to just stay there.
Because you have to be mentally ready.
You got to be mentally ready, man. Right. You got to be mentally ready. You got to be fiscally ready. You can help people without actually living there. You know, you can send funds. You can go make a difference without even actually being there. Yeah.
Right. Because I talked to the high school that I work at, there's a lot of people. Well, there's a good group of people that come back to the school and work in some kind of aspect with the school, no matter if it was they graduated 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 5 years ago, you know what I mean? Like they come back and they want to help in that school system. And we're having this same conversation of like, man, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I just had a conversation with one of the ladies I worked with last night at the football game. We like, what can we do to get these students to understand that they do have privileges? Like there's opportunities here in this school, no matter what it looks like or how ranked they are, higher or lower, you can still get somewhere from this school. And there's people from the school that I work at that have gone on to do highly successful things, no matter how, you know, what, how long they've been out. You know, but it's happened. Mm-hmm. And if it's happened for them, it can happen for you.
Man, absolutely.
I don't have that connection because I didn't grow up in the same city. I do have that drive to get somebody from one place to another and help them build that foundation because of the time that the time period that they're in. So being an adolescent and right before you go off to college and start making your own decisions, I'm helping them build that foundation because I understand where they're at. Right.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta let it go. I can only help the willing. And
that's right.
If you reciprocating and you don't just, you know, back talk me because we got students all the time. I'm like, hey, this is what's gonna happen, you know, trying to prepare them, and they like, you know, we arguing almost. Mm-hmm. and it happens all across the board with everybody, and we get frustrated. We just like, all right, whatever, you know.
You know what you I've learned though, like Michael. You know what I've learned though, man. I've learned that a lot of times that people become, or especially kids, they become defensive because one, they have so much loyalty to their neighborhood because they feel like that's the only thing that they have. And I get it to an extent. I do. I get it that we have to have loyalty to our family, to our neighborhood. You know, you come up in the hood, you know, you represent your block or you represent your area where you're from. I get that for real. It makes sense. I mean, you got to have some type of loyalty. But the issue is when the loyalty to others becomes a part of your detriment, that's an issue. And so when we introduce them to new possibilities and new things that they can do, a lot of times they become defensive. And the reason they become defensive is because what they internalize that as, what you're telling me my family did all this time is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So instead of me having to change, I got to defend the bad decisions of those around me. And so so my approach has been, I'm not trying, you know, to say that what you're used to is wrong. I'm just trying to get you to see it from a different lens. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just trying to get you to see from a different perspective. And so I always start when I go back and I talk to kids and I talk to them, whether it's clients or whether it's their families, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever capacity that I'm serving as, man, I try to start with just meeting them where they are. I let mm-hmm. them know, hey, this is where I went to high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, hey, they still serving that over there. Mm-hmm. That building's still up. They still got that. You know, I mean, and I start relating to them. And then I learned that when I can relate to them, I become relevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just, but man, it's a hard job, man. Yeah. Look, kudos to you, man, and all of your coworkers for that hard work in helping and tutoring and mentoring and teaching these young people, man. They need it. So hats off to you for that commitment, man.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it. We try.
Okay. I mean, that's all we can do.
Because, you know, I had another coworker. She was like, these are your kids, right? These are your kids. I was like, no, they not my kids. I mean, I don't have that attachment, right? Because, right. You know, men and women are kind of, we different in our nurturing type thing. I'm here to help you build a foundation and move you along, right?
Right.
They, you know, they want to nurture them. Oh, I don't want to see you go, whatever it is that they want to do. I was like, they not my kids, but I do have an obligation, a duty while I'm here to give them all that I got. It's
Right.
and I wanna go back and actually tell her this because I was like, they ain't my kids, they ain't my kids.
Right. You gotta be
But
like, look,
I do have
they
an
are my
obligation.
assignment. They're my assignment. They're not my attachment.
Right.
So
They're my
they're not,
students.
yeah, they're not attached to me. I've got an assignment. I'm gonna do my assignment. I'm gonna move
Yeah,
on.
you're
That's right. Yeah, that's it.
Man, I didn't go to an HBCU, but like one of the big things that I talk about, and when I talk to other people about HBCUs, is the confidence y'all have when y'all leave there, and all the people that I've interviewed through the HBCU Experience Movement,
Right.
like confidence, confidence, confidence. Where do you think that confidence come from? I think just one area is that a common theme amongst everybody is that they totally immersed themselves in the work. So they did the classwork, they got involved in the community, they got involved in an organization and all of these different things. So that is like a sports athlete that they practice long enough, they get confident in shooting the fadeaway, right?
Right.
So what else is there about HBCUs that gives people that confidence when they come out?
Man, that's incredible. Well, let me put it, that is an incredibly loaded question. I don't know how much time we got on this podcast, man, because I could just go on and on and on and tell you about where it comes from. I think I want to kind of summarize it this way. Without getting into my whole chapter that I wrote, I think that the chapter that I wrote and that I was, my contribution to the book will give you some insight as to where that came from, because we really kind of go down memory lane for me
Okay.
with arriving on campus. I wrote this because I wanted the reader to be able to just walk with me through the initial arrival as a freshman at North Carolina A&T and what it did for me. And one of the things that I highlight, and I promise I'm not going to get into details because I want you to read it too. But one of the things that I did was I taught, and I for the focus of my chapter, my contribution is around this program that I attended in Harrison Auditorium as a freshman. It was called To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. And I use that as the structure for my contribution because it gave me an insight. It gave me a sense of pride. And what that did was, I mean, you got to think about it. HBCUs were created because black folk couldn't go to white schools.
Right.
So that's their way of saying, that's the government's way of saying, hey, we're going to give y'all a school because we don't want you over with everybody else. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give you this and you make do with the best that you can do with this. We're not going to let you have so many specialties. Why do you think that HBCUs usually have at least just one specialty, whereas most PWIs, they have a number of them? Because they sit down and say, hey, look, Central, what you going to pick? If A&T is going to be if they're going to be the agricultural school, what you going to get? You can't have agriculture, so you got to pick one. Okay, we're going to take law. All right, Elizabeth City, what are you going to get? Because you can't have law. Central got that. So you can only have one. We're not going to let you compete with the PWIs. They said, okay, we're going to be the educator school. That's where the teachers are going to come. And so what they did was they developed these schools and these universities, man. So with the idea of like, we're going to give you this, but we ain't going to give you what everybody else got.
Yeah, we ain't
You
gonna give
know,
you all of
we ain't
it.
going to give you all of it. And so you go in. And the first thing that they did for us was they gave us the history of our school. They gave that to us to be able to say, listen, we are a testament that a rose can still bud and blossom in concrete, that you can still prosper. And over the years, look at the success stories, look at the alumni that have come out and have contributed to not just the black community, but contributed to the world on a world platform, that you're not given the same as PWIs, but look at what you're able to contribute, what you're able to do. And so there's a sense of pride that comes along with it, because then I understand, you know what? You know, I may have a plight, but I'm prideful. You know, I'm proud to be who I am. I'm proud of what I look like. You know, I'm proud of where I come from and all of those who came before me. I stand and I rest on those shoulders of those strong men and women that fought for me, be it in the, you know, the civil rights movement or in any arena area, be athletics or, you know, academia. I come from this stock, man. And when I come from this stock, it gives me a sense of pride because now I'm a part of that. I'm the lineage of all of this greatness. And I understand that I too share in that. And so the same education they received that empowered them, that allowed them, entangled them in these circles of strong leaders that all across the world, I'm a part of that now. Mm-hmm. So I go into any community in any setting, no matter what courtroom I'm in. You know, people always say, well, you went to Central. I said, I did, but I wouldn't have gone to Central, but for North Carolina A&T. And so it gives you this sense of confidence, you know, like, well, I understand what I'm up against. And because I understand it, I can equip myself for it. And that's what it did. It equipped me to be able to go out. Like I say in one of the lines in my chapter, I said, it's like black words on white paper. It mm-hmm. allows me to be able to go into an area where there's not many who look like me, but I'm able to stand and I'm able to articulate. I'm able to contribute to that environment, regardless of what they perceive me to be before I even get there. And that's what HBCUs do. So, yeah, you got to have that confidence,
man. Yeah.
And plus, you know, it's super dope to go, man. I hate that you missed that experience, but I mean, you know, you look across the yard. It's like a family size pack of Skittles, man. You look across the yard, you see so much culture, so much, you know, so much art, you know, where it's fashion or poetry or the arts or academia or government. And I mean, debating, there's so many like brothers and sisters, man, are super intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
So you look across this yard and you're like, you know what? I can grab from everybody and we all make ourselves better.
Right. And then you walk into any one of them environments. And that's what I got from, even though I didn't go to a HBCU, I had to go back and study in my 30s and understand what that looked like for us in our mm-hmm. plight and the way that we went through life and how we got slighted in every aspect of life. Right. So right. The school, I mean, the school that I worked at last year, was the high school of, the famous FAMU, band director.
Uh-huh.
And the history that school has of excellence, of black excellence, is one of the most eye-opening things, that all of this excellence came out of this one school in Kansas City, right. Kansas. Uh-huh. Right? Like, yeah. I'm talking, they was beating down folks all over Kansas in everything. They got chess tournament, like everything. And I was like, man, and they did it without the resources.
Isn't it something? I mean, that gives you even more, I mean, pride about it. Look, I'm able to still achieve or surpass where you are with little and less.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and that's I think that's our that superpower drive. Is. Our superpower lies in our adversity, because mm-hmm. I mean, I study success and I know that there is absolutely a difference in success for white people, black people, Asian, on down the line, right? Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing that I see between white and black is that the adversity. So as time went on and generations went on, you know, white people had things to pass down, you know, inheritance, you know, you started on a certain level in your family, right? Right. And after every generation, it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, right?
Right.
We didn't have that, right? And we kind of stayed the same. Some of us did, some of us didn't. Mm-hmm. But the adversity was always there. And the adversity is something that I'm seeing that, you know, the white entrepreneurs and, you know, they talk about how, you know, they had a alcohol problem. They had to go to rehab, or they lost their business because their family or whatever, you know. that is a created adversity. You know,
right.
It wasn't
right.
from the outside, like I have to deal with this and deal with my own issues on top of it. Like, we were born in adversity. So one of my favorite quotes from Napoleon Hill is, every adversity comes with it the seed of its equivalent or greater advantage. And once I heard that and I started thinking on that and I started having these experiences with the HBCUs and the school that I worked at and looking at all the different situations that Black people come out of and be successful, I was like, that is the one of the truest quotes I've ever heard. And it applies directly to us and our adversity. We get to, and this is what I expanded on, was we get to, our adversity builds up, and it's built up over a whole bunch of years and hundreds of years, because our ancestors and our relatives, they weren't able to use that advantage.
Right.
They weren't able to use that advantage. And now we get the freedom and the resources and all of that stuff to use right now, if we can harness those adversities and overcome the generational curses, the family, all we have to overcome that. And it has to be intentional. It has to be deliberate. If we can do that, we harness the power of all of those adversities into our advantage. And the seed, and you know what a seed has to do. You have to water it. You have to tend
right.
to it. You have to change the soil sometimes. You have to plant it in a bigger pot. You know, those type of things. We have to cultivate our advantage. And now,
and you know, the first thing that a seed does, Michael, the first thing that a seed does is it dies.
Oh, it does it. That's oh.
You know, that's okay. The first thing you think about it. When the seed goes in the ground, its shell, the thing that holds the potential on the inside, it has to die. It dissolves so that thing that's in it can begin to sprout up.
Man.
And so maybe the adversity is the advantage.
Right.
Because we need to be crushed and for that to die so that which lies dormant on the inside of us can come out.
We rather live in enormous than die dormant. That's
right.
What Jay-Z said.
Yep. That's it. Yeah, man.
Man, the seed has to die. It has to break away from something. I'm writing that down right now.
Yeah, the seed has to, and the seed gives the greatest sacrifice.
Yes.
Because it has to die so that which lies dormant can live. Yeah, man.
Man, you just said some new light on that. Shoot. That's some stuff right there.
Man, I hope it encourages your listeners.
Oh man, it encouraged me. So I'm gonna tell everybody, you gotta listen to this podcast. This is one of the man, I did not know that. The seed dies. Dang. All right. Back to the subject. That just blew my mind right there.
Wow.
So how did you choose North Carolina A&T as your university? We didn't hit that right off the bat.
Funny story, man. So my I have two cousins that like brothers. We grew up literally together in the same house and everything, and so I call them my brothers. And so my oldest, who passed away, he went to Shaw. He was 10 years older than me. I didn't really understand HBCUs, PWIs at that point. You know, I just know that, I mean, he's my bro, he went to school, and school really wasn't his thing, so he ended up going to the military. Then my older brother, we were close in age, he went to Chapel Hill. And so, you know, I'm the youngest, and you always want to be like your brothers, you know. So the one that I was closest to in age, I saw him going to Chapel Hill. So, oh, I'm going to Chapel Hill too. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm like 8 years old. This is where I'm going to go. I'm going to be a lawyer. And then as I matured and, you know, I got into high school and I started doing college tours, I shall never forget. It was my freshman year in high school, and we went to see a play at North Carolina A&T, and it was that night. And we got off, and we walked across the yard. We saw the play. It was incredible. And we came out, and I still remember this night like it was yesterday. I mean, all these years ago. And I still remember that night walking across the yard and between the ROTC building and Alex Haley dorm. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I was home. I knew it was for me. You know, I mean, now you're going to say that I'm gassing and that I'm being like I'm being facetious, but I'm not. Even the air felt different. You know, I felt like that's where I needed to be. And so from that night, my freshman year, man, I never looked at another school. I knew that I wanted to be at North Carolina A&T.
Wow.
That's where I wanted to be. And I had my eyes set on that. Unfortunately, man, you know, I did pretty good in high school. I was really involved. God bless me with a full 4-year scholarship to any school in North Carolina. All I had to do was pick the school that I wanted to go to, and it was paid for. And I chose North Carolina A&T. Best decision of my life was to choose, other than marrying my wife and other than being committed to the Lord and doing the work that he's called me to do. Other than that, man, North Carolina A&T was the best decision, hands down, that I made. So I knew that that's where I needed to be. That was home. Look, North Carolina A&T was me, and I was it. I had to be there. And so I went, and you know, I was able to create lifelong friendships and relationships. I met my wife and the mother of my children there. And I'll always honor North Carolina A&T.
That's dope. So that feeling that you had, like, I'm dealing with students because I work in the College and Career Center, and students just don't know. We haven't expanded their imagination, and they just don't know. So you know, when you don't know, you come in with expectations, right?
Right.
So listen to this, and I'm trying to get that experience that you had to walk out of somewhere and just be like, oh, this is home. You have to be present in the moment and not thinking about, is this for me or is this not for me? You just have to be experiencing that moment. You went to the play, you enjoyed the play, you walked out. You know, these are all feelings that you're experiencing. And if it got clouded by is it boring?
Right.
Oh, the play was boring. Now I'm not even looking at the whole school as a whole now, because when I went there that one time, it was boring. Now you know, it kind of shows that you have to be 100% present. And I want to talk to like my student listeners. So if you going to explore your college, don't look at it as boring or fun, or just go and experience it. Let go of all your inhibitions, and you're going to go and visit many different colleges, maybe many different colleges. Hopefully you take the time out to go and visit and do your due diligence and see what everything is all about, and expand your horizons.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, that's so important, man. Yeah, I mean, it's important to embrace it and not just interview it. I didn't go interviewing the school. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, yeah, I'm gonna go see if, you know, if they hype, or I mean, it was at night. It wasn't anything going on. It was just to be on the yard, to walk through those buildings, to see and to feel the pride that the students had, to be able to see the culture that existed. And I mean, all of that played a role. I mean, the play was good, but I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, it's the greatest play in the whole wide world. I mean, the students did an incredible job, but it was more than that, man. I think that a lot of times our students, they misjudge a place based off of a moment. Like, for example, everybody says, or they talk about North Carolina A&T, first thing they say, oh, it's a party school. Mm-hmm. And I'm so offended by that. Because I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean it's a party school? I mean, every school has its share of parties. Well, you know, y'all's homecoming, yes, Jiho, it's the greatest homecoming on earth. What do you expect it to be? I mean, you know, 250,000 people come to Jiho every year. I mean, there's always at least 100,000 people that's just in the street because we bring, I mean, it impacts the city economically. I mean, it's a huge event. People from all over travel so that they can be a part of this experience called Jiho. But Jiho is 7 days. I mean, one thing that they don't understand is that we pride ourselves in academia. We produce the top Black engineers in the country. Mm-hmm. We produce the most Black engineers. I mean, from all over our business school, everything that we contribute, computer science, all of those things, agricultural majors and, you know, animal science, all of those things. So in other words, I tell them, like, listen, we enjoy Jiho. Jiho is 7 days long. We turn up. We have the greatest time in the world. It's a family reunion. If you, I mean, no Aggie is a stranger to another Aggie, hands down. If you went to North Carolina A&T, then period, you're family. But A&T will send you home. If you're not doing, not doing your work, you will go home. You will not, you will be an Aggie for a semester, for a year, and they will send your hind home. And I think that sometimes we look at the fun without looking at the future part of it. I tell kids all the time, you choose your school not off of the mascot and its colors. You choose your school off of the major. Mm-hmm. What's going to help you? You know, if you're going to go to a school for physical therapy, then you need to look at the program that it has. Don't go just because Jiho is dope. Go because it's going to give you some opportunities and it's going to really contribute to your future and what you really want, you know? And so, and then you have other HBCUs that are a little bit smaller, that may be a little bit smaller for you. And sometimes it's, oh, I want to go here, but that school might be a little bit too big. You know, you may not be able to adjust initially. So it's okay to start out a smaller one and then transfer, or to just go to a smaller one, then to get your master's or your postgraduate degree at another HBCU. I mean, the thing about it is, you got to be completely open to embracing the experience of being on that campus and seeing what it's like, just to be open to it, period, before you start interviewing it. Yeah, that would be my advice to your student listeners, to just live in that moment. Because I still remember when I went to North Carolina A&T, that first time I knew it was meant to be. And I'm so glad that I followed through and that I followed what I wanted to do.
Yeah. A lot of students have trouble with picking something. So there's so many options out there. How did you come to, like, was there a process that you went through? Was like, I'm going to pick this and I'm not going to have any regrets?
No, you know what? You got to be okay with I think that the reason that a lot of people struggle with picking something is because it's really not about picking a direction. They struggle with the idea of failing or having to change their mind. Like, you got to be willing to just change your mind. I think if you go in, you just say, this is what I'm going to do. Sometimes young folk, like, you know, I don't know what I want to do, because they have an idea, but they're scared to pursue it because they may not be good at it. And it's okay to try something and be like, you know what? I thought I wanted this, but this ain't what I really wanted. When I went to A&T, I went with English education. I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. I knew that. But I wanted to teach for a couple of years because I felt like that was a way I could contribute. I can give back. You know, I can really make a difference in the lives of young people. And then I'll go to law school. My idea was, I want to teach for like 4 years. I want to teach high school English. I want to teach the ninth grade, and I want to see them all the way through graduation. And then I'm going to leave and I'll go to law school. Man, let me tell you something, Michael. I went there and I started going through the education program and I saw everything I had to go through. I was like, there is no way in the world I'm going to go through all of this to get my teaching license to only do it for 4 years. Like, I must be crazy if I think that I'm going to go through all of this and do it for 4 years, quit and go to law school. So I dropped the education and I just focused on English. I became a professional English major because I knew that for law school, I needed to know how to write. I needed to know. Mm-hmm. I needed to know grammaticality. I needed to know syntax and sentence structure and how to put all that together, linguistics, all of that. And so I just focused on that. And then I left from A&T. I worked briefly on Capitol Hill, and then I went to North Carolina Central for law school. And so I was fine with that. I mean, even when I went to law school, I was like, you know what? I never want to do criminal law. Never want to do it. I'm going to do family law. Got to law school. Couldn't stand studying family law. And then I came out, and guess what I started doing? Criminal law. And then I did it for 10 years. And then I switched to do just family law, because now I don't even do criminal defense. And mm-hmm. I love doing family law. So, you know, my advice is be open to changing your mind. You know, if and mm-hmm. do what it is that you want to do, not what everybody around you is telling you to do, because some people will try to live vicariously through you. Mm-hmm. You've got to make a decision for yourself. And when you make a decision for yourself, Michael, I really believe this, be it school, life, career, whatever it is, when you make that decision for yourself, you tend to be committed to it and to see it through.
And you don't really have regrets after it, too.
No, even if you failed, yeah. You don't even regret. Yeah. You're like, you know yeah. what? I mean, I just screwed that up, but you know, I learned from it. And so you don't ever lose if you learn from it.
And you never lose unless you quit.
That's exactly right. And so that's my advice, man. Like, just go after whatever it is you want to do. Just pursue it, you know, and then be free to change your mind. Like, you know what? No. I don't want to do it. I was counseling someone the other day, and I was like, you know what, how old are you? And they were saying that they're like in their late 20s. I was like, you know what, you're young enough to fail. And they looked at me, they're like, what do you mean? I was like, you know, it's okay to fail and start over or go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, I just feel like, yeah, but what's your measuring tool? You feel like you need to have this at a certain age. Where are you getting that from?
Right. Because we're not really looking at the really successful people, because it took them into their 30s, into their 40s to really gain that success.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is, all of those failures up to that moment is what prepared them.
Yes.
For the success that they have right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is one. I mean, failure is success, and success is failure. If you're not shooting thousands of shots, Michael Jordan, and right. missing them, you ain't gonna make those ones. I just saw something on Instagram about Steph Curry and his shooting coach. They got some type of system where it shows them how the ball goes in the net, mm-hmm. and they count if it touches the rim at any point. It's a miss.
Wow.
And so when we see Steph Curry go off for 9 for 9 and 3 for 3 and 3 point, you know, stuff like that right. in the first quarter, and got 25 points, and he's shooting these incredible shots, a couple things go into it. It's practice. It's knowing what you need to do. It's being intentional and deliberate about what you're doing, and then executing on that. And yep. and once you get to that point of execution, you have done a lot of things. And when you mentioned about you became an English like major, like that was you you were professional English, right? And right. when you was like going through the list of things that you knew you needed for what you wanted, that's where people get they just don't know what they need, and we don't study what we need ultimately to get to where we want to go, right?
Right.
So you already knew as a lawyer, I'm gonna need these basic things, and I'm gonna need to be almost a master at these when I get to that point.
That's
because
right.
I'm not looking back. I can't look back, because if I have to look back, I'm not going to become a lawyer.
And you know what? And if you skimp the product, if you skimp the process, then you slight the product.
Mm.
And the process does not feel good. Did I want to always study linguistics? No. Did I want to do all this reading and writing? No. But it was necessary for what I wanted for my future. And I think that sometimes we focus so much on the end result that we really skimp the process that's necessary for us to go to get there, you know?
Yeah, that's something that I struggle with, because I developed a philosophy for individual achievement, and it maps out, it gives you a blueprint on, you know, kind of like the milestones to get there. So it's a reverse engineering thing. You already knew that you wanted to be a lawyer. These were the steps that you needed to take. That's reverse engineering. Everybody does it. But the thing that I struggle with is that what happens when you already know mm-hmm. what you need to do? And I think it's a fear that people have mm-hmm. of, this is what I know I need to do. And if I do it, because I've gone through this too, if I do it, I'm going to get this. So, you know, I know that if I become a speaker, if I become an author, and I'm a life coach, I've been doing it for years, I just haven't officially done it, you know, and if I practiced all these things, and if I put it into execution mode, I know I'm going to get exactly what I've been dreaming of my whole life. Right. And then you, like, the fear of success sets in. It's like, mm-hmm. man, am I ready for that? Am I, you know, and I think a lot of people, when I work with them, I'm like, you can do this. Like, it's not out of your reach to lose 30 to 50 pounds in 6 months to a year. It's not out of your reach. You have to do these things day after day. But when people start seeing what they have to do to get what they want, then they start backing off and they not really committed. And
right.
I don't know what that is. And I've been trying to figure it out. And maybe that's not for me to figure out. It's just for me to be the messenger. I have an assignment, is what you said earlier.
Right. I mean, you know, I think that sometimes people are just afraid of failure. They fear trying to do it and not doing it well. And I think that in every failure that I've ever experienced, it taught me what I needed to do better and what I did not know about myself.
Mm.
You know, and it's okay to not get it right. And sometimes you just gotta listen to all your listeners listening right now. Sometimes you just need to hear these words. It's okay to not always get it right. It is okay. And when you don't always get it right, you pick yourself back up and you start going, pursuing that thing again, but you just do it in a different way, with a different perspective and a different drive. And that's what it's really all about. Don't quit. You just got to readjust and go back to the drawing board and do it all over.
Man, those wise words. If y'all ain't listening to that, then I don't know what to tell you. So to end it, can you, you know, plug the book? It's coming out this, what is it?
The 27th. It's coming out on 27th. I hope that everybody will order this book and get it. I promise you, it's going to give you some insight. I know a ton of the co-authors, a lot of the contributors and stuff. We went to school together. I can't wait to read their experiences. I know that my contribution is going to give you some insight as to when I first got on the yard, what I experienced, and what I was able to take away from being a part of the HBCU experience. So it's not just for people getting ready to go to school. It's to give you an insight, because HBCUs contribute to every community. When you start looking at leaders in your community, whether you live in an area where HBCU is present or not, when you start looking at leaders, I bet you can find a plethora of leaders in your community, those that, whether it's politicians or pastors or community activists or elected officials, whatever it is, that they are the products of HBCUs. And so this book is going to be super dope. I know it's going to give you some good insight and a whole different perspective. I can't wait for it to come out, for me to get it. I want to dive into it and read some of the experiences of my colleagues. And I hope that you go out and get it. I mean, and gift it to some people. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to challenge those mentors and teachers and leaders and those I mean, buy several copies and gift it to young people that you want to encourage, that you want to go, that you want to see go to an HBCU to get the same experience, whether you went to A&T or not. You know, I always tell people, Mike, I'm like, listen, I went to North Carolina A&T. I think had Jesus needed to go to school, he would have attended North Carolina A&T State University. But
those big words.
Right, look, there. I'm like, look, but I do believe this, though. Like, you know, I think it's the greatest HBCU in the whole wide world. But even in light of that, I support every HBCU. So whether I went to Fayetteville State, Elizabeth City, Shaw University, Howard, wherever I went, here's the thing. I ain't gonna let nobody talk about HBCU, because every HBCU has contributed to the fabric of this country and this world. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you want another young person and you believe HBCUs the way I do, and you want other young people, regardless of whatever background they're from, to experience this and be a part of that lineage and that history, buy this book and gift it to them and tell them this is why you need to go to HBCU.
And last thing, what does success mean to you?
Man, success is very, very, very subjective. I think that success comes in different phases. And in my maturity, I've learned that what I thought was success in one phase of life is really minuscule in the phase that I'm currently in. And I give you this example. When I was young, I thought success was, you know, tangible things, being able to have the car, drive the car that you want, or to live where you want to live, be able to travel. When I was able to achieve that, it wasn't as important anymore. And then success became, you know, family and being able to get married. And then I thought that marriage was success. But then after I had my first daughter, I realized that marriage was really success. But then being a father and going into fatherhood was just a whole different level. So I think that success is transitional. I think that as you grow and you mature, your desires change. And success is certainly not what your neighbor or your colleague has. I think that the worst thing you can do is to compare and covet what someone else has without cultivating who you are as a person. And so as you grow and as you mature, I think success will change in what it looks like. But here's the key to that. I think that real success is learning from the journeys of reaching those smaller successes and being able to build upon them. I'm not trying to be deep, but I'm just trying to be practical. I think that sometimes we look at success and we think that we failed because we haven't lived up to what someone else is doing our age, or that graduated with us or in a similar career. That's not what it's like, because you can have all the money in the world and be unhappy at home. Mm-hmm. You can have the greatest home life and then fail on your job. Success is really subjective. And the only thing that I can tell your listeners is, don't measure your level of success by those around you. Love God, love your family, and love yourself. And I think that you will have the greatest success that a human can ever, ever experience.
Well, Attorney Lynch, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure getting to know you and hearing your story and your HBCU experience with North Carolina A&T State.
Man, Michael, thank you for having me, man. Can I encourage your followers, man, to follow me, on IG or Facebook at Chance Lynch ESQ. You can follow me on all of the social media. That's Twitter, IG, as well as Facebook, Chance Lynch ESQ. That's ChanceLynchESQ. And you can also follow my business page at Lynch Law PLLC. On IG and on Facebook. So I'd love for your listeners to follow me, man. And if they were encouraged by this podcast, if I said anything, for them, you know, to just shoot me a DM, let me know that they listened to it, that they bought the book, tag me in the book, whatever it is, if they got a quote that they enjoy, tag me. I want to share it, because I love to be interactive with those who follow me, so that we can, we're in this thing together, Michael. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you having me. It's been an honor to spend this time with you.
I appreciate it too. I'll let you know when it comes. When we put out the podcast.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate that.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You as well, brother. Take care.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success Is My Religion podcast. Again, partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement. be on the lookout for the book, the North Carolina A&T State University 3rd edition. It's coming out on Amazon in the next month or so. So go get it when it comes out.